is just these threads of feeling like you matter and you're treated like a fellow human being. Managers just have such a potential for a ripple impact on their teams, and they don't know how to do it. Driving performance with empathy. I have been a lawyer, I've been in HR. I'm not trying to turn managers into junior lawyers in HR.
Welcome to Future Work, the podcast about a happier future of work and the role of people and technology within that. In today's episode, I welcome Ashley Hurd, a lawyer turned management trainer whose TikToks and YouTube videos reach over 5 million views a month. This reach gives Ashley an amazing insight into the real sentiment of employees and managers, which she combines with data from doing corporate leadership training at scale. We'll discuss the importance of respect in the workplace, managers' untapped potential, and AI's evolving role in leadership. It's a great episode if you deal with remote teams, navigating hybrid work environments, or simply want to improve your managers. So let's dive in. Hybrid work is here to stay, but are you making the most of it? Join us on July 8th for the Hybrid Work Dilemma. Learn how to do more with less office space while increasing productivity, collaboration, and employee engagement. Hear from Agathe's Karine Murray, Stanford University's Nick Bloom, the world's leading hybrid work expert, Janet Polk-McLaurin, the Global Director of Workplace Research at Gensler, one of the most prominent workplace design firms, and Tiffany Ouyang Lam, the US Workplace Manager for Grammarly. And this is not just another webinar. It's a chance to get inspired and connect with peers in a live roundtable to tackle your hybrid work challenges. Thanks to Tectic, the number one rated space logistics platform used by customers like Microsoft, Red Bull, and the UN for making this event possible. Sign up now at flexos.org/hybrid2024. flexos.org/hybrid2024. Don't miss out. Ashley, thanks so much for being on today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan.
It's so great to have you here. And I wanted to kick off with a question because our mission here is to create a happier future of work, because for most of us, work can be quite miserable. And and I just listened this morning to your HR Besties episode about green flags in the workplace. So I know that work also can be really great from time to time. But you get now over 5 million views, I think, on social media with both your role play and you're talking to the camera about all these issues that are happening in the workplace. So maybe if you want to understand how do we create a happier future of work, what are you kind of hearing from your community? What content do you see resonate about some of the things that are very challenging about work?
When I think about common threads, some of it is really basic of people feeling like they matter and that they're respected, their life and their work. And a lot of that could be happiness. And that can play out different ways from compensation. A lot of the comments you'll see is, you know, just pay me, just pay me. But if I were to say to someone like, okay, if I were to give you, you know, X amount more money, or you can, you know, work 40 more hours a week and have a boss that yells at you or never responds to your communication, people go, well, I don't want that. And so a lot of it is just these threads of feeling like you matter and you're treated like a fellow human being and have that level of respect. And the happiness aspect, I think it comes from when you have that. Because when you feel like you're respected, then you may feel like you can open up and share things you're comfortable with on that personal level. And that's where I've certainly felt that on a personal level. And I've seen that from other people. But it really starts with that aspect of making people feel valued and respected at work.
And what's the flip side of that? What's the content where you're doing a role play with Luke and it's about a certain topic that like everyone will jump into the comments and say, yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what's wrong with work. What are some of those topics that just are the continuous bane for people in work?
Well, I haven't done this in a while. This is the video that really went viral for me. It got a few million views and I didn't have anything like that. It was a video on pumping at work for women, breast milk, pumping, whatever. And so in what a lot of the vein was of people like, oh my God, I've had this experience from pumping in like a storage closet or the bathroom or the jokes and comments. And so in 59 seconds, you know, I kind of tried to encapsulate all of that at once. in that level. And it really stems from that situation where, you know, a manager in this situation, Luke is male, so he did not understand what this was like, but really having no idea what that experience is like and how dehumanizing and frustrating and it can be. And so through that video, I talk a lot about having policies that, you know, limiting someone to 15 minutes, like there's no one size fits all. And so in the comment section on that, I was never anticipating, but it was so many people's experience. And I'd certainly had similar experiences personally. So I was validated yet horrified that it's such a shared experience. And so, but it's that vein of when people just, they don't know or take time to understand what it's like for others.
Yeah, still going back to that same theme of like people just want to be treated as humans and they want to be treated probably as grown-ups. Yeah.
Yes, yes, exactly right. Like people don't generally want to be treated worse than someone might their own children. And it's a pretty base level expectation. And nobody's perfect, fair enough. But the managers that do that consistently.
Definitely, yeah. What are some other topics that you see popping off when you post something? What are some other topics that you see that people really, like again, like they have that lived experience. They're like, yep. That's my life.
I mean, the aspect of time off, like right now, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, a lot of people may be getting ready for summer vacation. And so this issue of people who feel like they can't take their time off because they have so much work to do, that might be a little bit more of a uniquely American perspective. But across the board, the managers that will, like, you know, reach out to you when you're on vacation or after hours, like not having any sense of personal boundaries, and other things like credit. You know, someone works so hard and they never even get any sort of credit. And by credit, I might even mean like thank you or an acknowledgement that someone did something. And so a lot of it, I really think, is this disconnect that there are managers and also colleagues, they're getting what they need and they're moving on with life and they're not thinking about what that impact and how frustrating it can be to not get credit, also how validating it can be when you do get it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got to talk about managers, I think. Okay. As the founder of Manager Method, we got to talk about managers, right? Are you ready?
I like it. I like it. I'm ready. I'm always ready. You can ask my kids. I were like going down the street. I'm like, oh, Mark, are you thinking about, what does that have to do with work? I'm like, I won't tell you. I'll tell you later.
I heard in an interview you did last year that you originally chose employment law because someone said that there will always be work in employment law. And then eventually you ended up founding Manager Method, really focused on helping managers become better managers. And you even mentioned in the interview that a lot of the best managers you saw were not really in these corporate settings, but they were in maybe fast food restaurants or hospitality. So what drove you to really be so invested in this idea of good management? And what are some of the lessons that you got from now doing that content for quite a while?
I love your research. You're so good, Dan. You put such a level of care, and this, my little researcher's heart is happy. But it's true. I mean, you know, I went into it, you know, based on suggestion, and I worked for 2 years between college and law school. It was corporate sales, but it was consulting research sales. So I had to marginally know what I was talking about. And I'm kind of a nerd, so I really got into it. And that year it was employee engagement research. And I loved it. I'd never seen anything like it before. I'd never taken an HR organizational development class, nothing like that. I really gravitated. And so hearing this idea of you'll never be out of work resonated to me because I was paying my way through law school and, you know, paid for it for years after with student loans. But I am an extrovert. I love people. I love to research and kind of human things. And so, you know, was certainly a reason I went into it. I found it much more interesting than any corporate finance law that I had to deal with. Mm-hmm. But really, it is one of the things I think I was surprised about is experiences that I had, and not even in, I was an outside lawyer, like a law firm lawyer for Kmart, for example. But I also worked at Kmart in the electronics department when I was a teenager and worked at Subway. And lessons I learned then, some of those stick with me more than things I learned in corporate. And I worked on the support side. So at KFC, I was on the legal team and I was kind of on this legal HR dual growth path. But I saw, we would go into restaurants and work alongside them. I feel sorry for the restaurant teams. Like, I'm trying to work the drive-through and like close my eyes to like listen. And it was really skill sets. But I saw managers there And they would have these conversations and they would be managing. They would literally be managing so many things at once. They would also be talking to their teams like, oh, you know, they knew things going on in their team's lives. Like, oh, how'd the ball game go last night, you know, for your kid? Or have you guys voted yet? Make sure you take time off, you know, to go vote. And then while getting things done, and it was really like wizardry. And so it was those skills that I've seen. That's the ability to get work done and drive performance in an empathetic way. That can be done in any type of environment. And so when I started Manager Method, it was because I've worked in those environments. I've also worked in boardrooms and some of the, on paper, top organizations in the world. But at the end of the day, a lot of managers just have such a potential for a ripple impact on their teams, and they don't know how to do it. That's what really drove me with some of those experiences.
Yeah. So maybe share a bit about Manager Method and what are some of the fundamental basic blocks that you teach every manager. I'm also very curious how you work with companies, because I'm assuming that most of the times a company will be the one to bring you in and to say, we don't really have manager training, so can you do it for us? And hopefully in a more fun way and you know, something that people actually retain the knowledge than typical corporate training. What does that side of the business look like? And again, yeah, what do you teach there?
So Manager Method, it is about what you said. It's about helping managers become better leaders, feel confident. And really, it's that idea of driving performance with empathy and knowing what you need to know. It's not, I have been a lawyer, I've been in HR. I'm not trying to turn managers into junior lawyers in HR. But it's to give people more autonomy. And so they're not running to HR to solve every people issue that comes in their team because they don't know what to do or say. That's not good for the manager. And that's not really good for their team member that doesn't want to hear from HR. I know that. But so what I teach is the whole skill set from thinking about hiring, like before you hire, are you, you know, when you're interviewing people, do you have headcount? Do you know what that means? Like, do you have authority to hire? Are you going to like set unrealistic expectations? Like, what are things you should know at the outset? All the way through, you know, onboarding, whether it's remote, whether it's in like a on your feet environment or a corporate environment, how to run one-on-one meetings, team meetings, how do you give performance feedback between those one-on-one meetings? All the way through, if someone's not performing, what do you do so you're not then, again, running to HR and saying, I need to get rid of this person? Like, okay, well, that's probably not going to work well for anybody. Up through even termination of employment, if your best employee quits, what do you do? And why does that matter to the whole rest of the team and yourself as a leader? And so it's a lot about opening people's eyes, but then giving them practical tips. So the way I work with organizations is I've done, and I've done live and virtual trainings, and I definitely enjoy those. But one thing I say is training can be like Mario Kart. Sometimes that resonates with people, sometimes it doesn't. But think of like your favorite video game or things like that. And so I say Mario Kart because you can pick a player that's slow as molasses, but is like going to hit every curve. It's like, you know, you the pluses and minuses, or you have like the mushroom that, like, you know, is speedy, but may fly off the tracks. And so you got to pick, there's rarely a perfect character, except for Princess, who's a very perfect character in Mario Kart. But when you think about training, like a lot of people will say live training. Okay, why do you want that? Because we know people are going to pay attention and they're actually going to do it and they're going to be there. Okay, cool. Got it. So you're telling me you want people to pay attention. But what happens when they're super engaged? They're all enjoying that training. Maybe they're taking notes, maybe not. But then they move on with life and they forget about anything that they've learned. Or what if, you know, someone that really needs to hear the training is out sick? Okay, so they're going to watch a replay of it when the person's not looking at them. Like, they're probably going to be pretty disengaged. And so what I do with organizations is video-based on-demand training. And so I have this whole, course, but it's indigestible, digestible modules. It's trackable. Now organizations can even load it into their own LMS. We have a license for that. Or we have it on our platform, and our client success team sends updates, tracking updates, and all of that. But for organizations, so it's on-demand. I have a whole schedule, draft communication, so people know how you announce it, how you talk about it. Here's reminders. But to thread the needle, I have a resource guide that goes along with it that has like tips and talking points, and it's all tracked to the module. So you can, so you don't have to take notes. You can like leverage it. But also for managers to then have a live component. I often say people watch the training now because I've added a whole module on managing remote teams, like optional module. People may have heard from me now for about 6.5 hours. Again, I have a 4 and 5 month schedule, so it breaks up. But like, people have heard from me. But for organizations, in part, it can be a really strong thing for HR to build your internal credibility and show yourselves as a partner. Yeah. And so I have materials for them to run follow-up cohort sessions. So they have sessions, and I have everything like PowerPoint deck, talking points, so they can run these sessions. I have videos. I have had conversations from junior HR coordinators to senior chief people officers who are all terrified to lead these sessions. So I get you, I work to get you comfortable doing that. And the number one feedback I have is like people like, this went so great. People were engaged, and especially those managers. I recently led one of the first sessions of that for an organization. And a manager who'd been there for a long time had said, you know, I'll be honest, I was not looking forward to this training, but I liked the videos and I really liked today. And I said, she's like, maybe that's not appropriate. And I said, no, that's the best feedback I could have. So it's really to thread the needle, to have the on-demand, have the written materials they can cite through, and then these sessions, but to do those internally and help. Some organizations will customize those materials themselves. Others, I take some heavy lifting and work on. So that is Manager 101, which is the name of it, what I do. But it really is, again, to upskill those teams.
But that's incredible, because then you're also upskilling the HR team in the process, and it becomes a conversation internally versus just, I've sent people to the training. They've done the training. Now you should be a good manager. Because it's actually when you dive deeper and you contextualize it to your company, then you actually start to have the real conversations about, okay, that's the theory and that sounds really great, but why are we not applying it? Well, in our company, we have a lack of this, or we don't have these resources, or I don't have the time to do that, right? You need to free me up to have time to manage things like that. So that sounds like a really good connection point. I think also overall, because you also do LinkedIn learning and you do obviously TikTok and you do these like corporate trainings and you have video training, you're learning a lot too about what actually works. Because for most people, they don't want to sit in long trainings, right? I still remember when I was in Ogilvy and I had these like compliance trainings where you have to like click through all the screens and it's just horrible, right? So do you also see now that because people are getting more used to short form content, that the training needs to be more like that, where it's more, you know, shorter pieces of information, and then what do you do with that, and then have that internal discussion? Is learning and development changing in that way as well?
I definitely think there's some like attention span that people, they don't want to sit for like hours on end and having this same discussion, which is why it can be helpful to have it. Okay, you can, you know, divvy it up. But a lot of it is, and one thing I have with my training, like at LinkedIn, when I did my LinkedIn learning course, you know, I did it, I flew out to California, I've done a couple of them, and I watched that and I was like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. My manager 101 course, my set is sitting at my desk and it's just talking conversationally like that. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, it's a set. So many people have worked on it. It's glossed over.
Yeah.
And I talked to a couple organizations and I said like, okay, what about from the quality aspect? And people said, it feels like a conversation. And so, and even I've had the same, like this manager 101 course I've had numerous, tech is probably the number one. I've had a number of kind of global tech companies that have used it, but like healthcare, manufacturing, nonprofit, restaurant and retail. And I was cognizant. And so in it, I do talk about like, okay, here's how to have a team meeting. If you have a couple minute pre-shift huddle, here's how to do it. If you have a 60 minutes, you know, sit in a conference room once a week or once a month or whatever. And so talking to those, and I'd spoken to this restaurant group, a large franchisee of a known brand, and had said, you know, give me feedback. So we ended up, he's like, keep all of the material in it. Because even sometimes while it talks about general corporate thing, our team, they love to hear that because that makes them think, what if we wanted to work on the support center? But organizations can customize like those sessions. Like that's where people can customize the toolkit, the talking points. Yeah. Like this is what we have. And it's been, has evolved and I have so much fun. I spend the vast majority of my time working on tweaking those and adding, recording additional modules. And so I do think having a conversational, engaging style, because that's a difference. I think about some of the trainings I helped to lead when I was a junior law firm associate and like, God bless them. But like some of these like senior partners, it's like, you know, the same conversation of like walking you through these law. Yes. And there's just not a practical application. Like, you know, managers don't care. Like they really don't. Nor should they. But if you put it in terms of like, do you feel like managers have to have a certain persona? Like that's the first slide that starts off. And do you feel like you have to shape it? And do you feel like you need to change? And so to get some of those conversations going, and that can be helpful to show this isn't regular manager training. It's cool manager training.
Yeah, I'm not a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. Come on.
Totally. I have a shirt that says exactly that. So.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think it's super interesting to think about like how formats are changing and what is the right balance between what people are used to from online content and what they would encounter in a corporate setting, which is night and day usually. And I think this probably bridges it quite well. And like you said, because you don't have to go to some set that is super polished and where like 20 people are working on it, you can actually add modules just by sitting back at your same desk and doing that extra content. So you already mentioned about remote work. So this sounds like another module that you now added with some tips. So I want to hear what are some tips in a remote work side. And obviously also want to hear, because I saw you now did a nano course about AI, like leading in the age of AI. What are some things managers need to know about that? But let's start with remote work, because that's something you spend a lot of time on. What is different about managing a remote team or managing a hybrid team versus managing an in-office team?
I mean, some of it is concerns that managers have frequently in remote and hybrid teams is, what is my team doing? How can I measure productivity? And they worry about that because they're hearing that from CEOs that go on news channels and say that, you know, people aren't productive and making these sweeping statements. And the beauty that I have is by having, you know, very scientific studies of comments on TikTok, but I see these common themes of people, and I know it from a shared experience of I work my ass off when I work at home frequently. I mean, right now it's 9 o'clock PM my time, and this is a delightful conversation. I've had plenty of nights doing remote work where I'm doing that and like, oh my God, because I feel obligated to in ways that I wouldn't have when I was in the office and felt like I could disconnect. And so some of this is really taking the spin on that and to saying to managers, you know, if you have these concerns, this is what you do about it. What about talking to your teams about that and saying, if I had to justify like productivity levels, I know you all are working, but how can I show that? And how can we measure those things and talk about it and give like real talking points for that? So some of it's thinking about that. Others are having conversations about boundaries, about how you do shut that laptop, turning off your phone and having those conversations that frequently, you know, managers assume that their team members know what to do and that if they're working long hours, that's their choice. And, you know, and they're not thinking about the long-term ramifications or having conversations. And so it really takes that idea of driving performance with empathy in some of the unique ways of remote work, including some self-care for managers in thinking about those topics. And so that was really our kind of most requested additional module. And so getting that out, now I have a whole, you know, toolkit and PowerPoint for that. And so I have like a bonus section because I do not introduce that module for solely in-person workplaces. That's like normally we don't customize the content of that, but I'm cognizant that there may be some in-person workplaces that do not want to sit around watching 45 minutes of remote work. So I have that as a bonus section in the library for managers. So I try to be very sensitive to that.
And what's the feedback on it when people hear these really important discussions, I think, around your team is working hard and probably maybe too hard. And are you keeping a tab on that side of it? And also, this is the tough part, like Emily Field's work from McKinsey on the importance of the middle manager, but also the plight of the middle manager being squeezed in between, you know, the work you have to do yourself, the pressure from above you, the pressure from below you. What's the response when people hear that?
It has been very strong because it is like people are like, oh, people need to hear this and they don't have any ideas. And the resource guide for that has gotten a lot of good feedback because it has again, questions to ask your team and also questions to ask IT, for example, of like, what do we have from a technological, like, and also for trainings, how can people use it? As well as one thing that's really emerged in the US, I'm curious globally, but accessibility for candidates that are ability for remote work has massively helped some candidates or team members, employees with unique needs that have mobility issues, that it's hard for them to get to the office.
Yes.
On the flip side, you've seen an increase in the US of hiring managers assuming, oh, if someone's deaf or hard of hearing, oh, we're a remote first environment, you can't, and not understanding that. And so that's been on the rise in the US from a claims perspective. And so in it, some of what I have is talking about that and also bringing this idea to managers of saying, okay, think about the people behind all of these things and how intimidating that can be to come into this workplace. And they may have had 20 companies that they tried to work with that shut them down. You can be that manager that with very basic steps shows them like, okay, support, you don't have to be the expert, but this is how you have that conversation and then go ask HR. Then your organization can tell you what your capabilities are. And so it's just bringing this confidence to be able to give those levels of respect that people may not have thought there are any options.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And probably a lot of stuff that's simmering below the surface and someone just has to come out and say it, and then you're that person. So very beneficial to the company, very beneficial to the manager, to the employees as well. So yeah, the same question on AI. So generative AI obviously has changed quite a bit in how we work. We've seen some recent studies from Microsoft, for example, that are saying that even if managers or leadership is not thinking about AI or creating AI frameworks or bringing the technology to the teams, people are just bringing their own AI tools and they're putting all their confidential company info into their own personal ChatGPT. What is leadership like? Because I'm sure some principles will be the same, that you have to be a good human and you have to be caring for people, you have to be empathetic. I'm sure some of that is the same, but there are probably also going to be some differences in how you manage a team in the age of AI. For example, are people telling you that they use AI, or are they keeping it a secret because they don't want to risk getting more work because you're now more efficient? What are you hearing in the market? What are some of the material you're developing on that topic?
That's a very good one. I think having those conversations is so important. And those, a lot of those are ways that, you know, the top leadership of the organization, like you gotta be realistic and try to embrace what you can and know that you have a whole mix of feelings in the workplace. You have some people that are excited. They're excited and they're embracing it. And they, like you said, they're using it. They're making it more efficient. And those people are afraid of bringing it up because they do think they're just going to get piled on. But showing ways that you can champion people's efficiency and not just punish your you know, most efficient performers by expecting them to all of a sudden do more. But so having those, you may also, again, have colleagues and team members that have a lot of fears. One is, how do I actually use this? And like, embarrassment to fear of job loss. Like, how is this going to impact? And so really trying to strategically think how people can integrate, asking questions, rewarding people for that. But for leadership and for team members, what I've done through LinkedIn now is ways that leaders can use, like, really, I focused on ChatGPT to keep it easy. And also it's hard to venture into a lot of different technologies because I may say it now, in an hour from now, it'll be like, this is, the name will change. I mean, yes. if hopefully everybody watches the LinkedIn learning course on become an AI powered manager. In it, I talk about logging into ChatGPT. Well, now you can just go to chatgpt.com. You don't have to log in. Like, okay, well, that was just in February, recorded that.
I'm running an AI training more for executives, and I had to change the material as the course was running. Like the next day, I had to change something because ChatGPT 4.0 came around. And suddenly my whole story about, oh, GPTs, you can only use it on the paid plan, suddenly was out of the window. So I had to like update the material in real time right before it went out. So yeah, it's hard to keep it up to date. It's true.
It's super hard. And so it's thinking about, and some of those lessons are things that seem basic, but like I say, ChatGPT is not your diary. So not using the confidential information, and it's not your encyclopedia. So don't rely on it. It's definitely getting a lot smarter. And I find myself using it. I definitely trust but verify. Well, I prompt but verify, I'd say, with it. But a lot of it is that in talking about ways you can do it. I mean, the manager course I have talks about ways you really, it's using ChatGPT as a personal coach. Again, mm-hmm. I'd say if you are doing a paid plan, not logging in with your work email, doing it through your personal email, kind of simple. But just thinking about that, some of these basic things of like one example I have in a course that's coming out, one other one with LinkedIn Learning on AI is, all right, let's say you have a team meeting. Let's say, oh my God, like I totally forgot I had this, or I have this team meeting. They've been so stale. Typing in, like, I have this type of team, you know, type of team. I have 7 people. We have 30 minutes and I want to do an activity on conflict management because we've just had a lot of things, or change management. Like we have some new managers. And it will generate literally an activity, and you can do all the tweaks. No one wants to sit in a room and have a computer lead you through the activity. They want you as a yes. manager or a real human sure. to talk through it, but it can absolutely like supercharge and just give you new ways of drafting things or you know, sending communications. So I am a huge fan of AI to become more efficient and just even using it in what seems to be super basic ways.
Yeah, but sometimes the basic ways are the best ways to apply it and to get immediate value from it. And like you said, like there's so much to be gained from. Just you have an issue, you go to ChatGPT and you get some kind of solution, right? Way beyond what like Googling would ever do for you.
It is 99.99%. I will never engage with trolls in my comments. And that is one of the things I've really had to like thick in my skin and learn the power of ignoring things and forgetting things. But
yeah.
When I've done a couple videos on ChatGPT and people say it's just a glorified Google, it is not. No. Google Pen, literally, I used the other day, and some of this I think is really important. And I have a new one that just came out this week on the LinkedIn Learning Nano course. So it's 9.5 minutes. You can learn 10 tips for work. You can master work-life balance less than 10 minutes, but it includes some of these tips. And one thing that I think I allude to in one of these videos, it's similar. The other day my son was sick. And so I took him to the urgent care. And I just had so much going on. And we're sitting there and there's nothing to read anything. I don't want to sit on my phone. I'd love to think of a story. I do not have a brain cell right now. And so I went to ChatGPT and I was like, can you write? And I told him, oh, we have this new course coming. Let's do this. I'll show you what you can do. And so I was like, write a story about a 10-year-old boy, his name, this is what his favorite stuffed animal's name is, and the Atlanta Braves, where we're from. And it wrote this great, and we were cracking up. Can you make it 3.5 minutes long? Because that's how long we bet it would be before the healthcare provider came in. And it is little things like that. But hearing that in ways I love being creative. I'm not going to rely on ChatGPT for all of those things. But in a pinch, it was exactly what I needed. And we were totally cracking up. So anyway, that's a good, try that one. Anyone that's looking for some source of entertainment.
Definitely. So it sounds like there is a lot to look forward to. Maybe work is still pretty tough for some, but there is hope. And hopefully, with the coming of more flexibility in when you work and also how you work with AI, the world of work will be better. I'm sure your trainings will still be needed for the foreseeable future.
I hope so. At least not before I retire.
Right, exactly. I'm sure that'll be the case. What's one wish that you have for the future of work? What do you hope to see?
I really think that may sound corny, but a level of just basic humanity. And I say that because in the AI context, a lot of people, don't just copy and paste anything AI, tweak it and add your own voice and style to it. Or just looking at the people around you and thinking every interaction you have with someone, you will have ripple effects on whether it's lasts for someone's lifetime or just lasts on who that person is in the next thing they move on to. If they go to their next, you go and drive in traffic if you're being a decent person, or if they're so stressed based on the conversation or you just took it out on them. And so all of those aspects of being human and just thinking more of people and trying to think of others at work in the way that you would want to be treated. And bringing those levels of humanity, I think, can bring the base levels of that respect that we talked about, but ultimately the actual joy and happiness at work.
We've gone full circle. Perfect. Thank you so much, Ashley, for being on today.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate you having me.
Thank you for joining us today as we heard about innovative management strategies from Ashley Hurd of Manager Method, who reaches millions a month on TikTok and YouTube. Here are the actionable key takeaways from the conversation. Number 1, respect and humanity in the workplace. Ashley sees a lot of unfiltered feedback on the world of work in her video comments. Combined with corporate training, it's taught her that when employees feel valued and respected, morale and productivity are significantly boosted. Ensure that you foster an environment where respect and empathy are central. Regularly check in with your team to understand their needs and concerns, and make people feel that they matter in things like being able to take time off and getting credit for their work. Number 2, the ripple effect of good management. Effective management goes beyond getting the work done well. It's about positively influencing and inspiring teams. But it goes further. As Ashley said, managers have a potential for ripple impact on their teams and often don't know how to harness it. So invest in your manager training program and focus on empathy, communication, and leadership skills. Give managers the autonomy to manage well and not have to run to HR every time. Number 3. Driving performance with empathy. Performance, of course, is a must, but don't forget empathy to create a balanced and effective management style. Focus on understanding your team's needs and aligning them with your organizational goals for optimal performance. And the final one, number 4, balancing remote and hybrid work. Remote work requires a shift in management style, focusing more on outcomes than on hours worked. As Ashley said,
Managers often worry what their remote team is doing, but it's about setting clear expectations and trust. Set those goals for your remote teams using regular check-ins to maintain engagement and address any concerns. Join me again next week when I speak to Janet Polk, the Global Director of Workplace Research at the leading architecture and design firm, Gensler. If you like this episode, please subscribe and give this podcast 5 stars on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps a ton to boost our mission of a happier future of work. To be the first to get updates on new episodes, subscribe at flexos.org/futurework.